presented by Zadok Jewelers.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Most interactive sports talk show in town. 713-780-3776. The call from text, YouTube at ESPN Houston, Twitch at ESPN 975. Texans will play next week on Monday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, after dropping their season opener 14-9 in Los Angeles. Since they're playing on Monday, they just did their Monday press conference for DeMeco Ryans on a Tuesday. DeMeco Ryans had a couple of interesting things to say. We'll start off with this, per Jonathan Alexander of the Houston Chronicle. Quote, "For Texans fans to be excited about anything in Houston, we've got to play better." End quote. Ding, 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 ding. Truer words have never been spoken. And I like that DeMeco is aware. How aware is he? I hope not too aware. But this is a bandwagon-ass sports town that once shrugged collectively at this team when they had won 9 games in a row with Deshaun Watson as their quarterback in his second year. It's a weird sports town. I say this very often to my friends from outside this city, and I'm not dumping on y'all. I'm just telling you that this is one of those places, and you know this already, for this team to be loved, they can't keep doing what they've always done when they've been good, outside of in 2011, where they lost their starting quarterback that actually might have given them a shot to win the whole thing. They have to play better. Ryans was asked about multiple different things. Here he is talking about urgency, which we discussed earlier in the show. Ryan said the urgency must pick up for the offense. He says they must get in and out of the huddle a lot quicker so they can make the right checks. Quote, "Everything falls on me. We'll get it fixed." End quote. Well, it's also on CJ Stroud. No one is in more command of the Texans and how quickly a team gets to the line of scrimmage than the quarterback. Certainly the head coach plays a role in that. I'll say, as someone who used to cover the Seattle Seahawks with Pete Carroll running the show, they did a lot of this lollygagging crap as well. And a lot of people in Seattle would blame it on Pete Carroll. And look, Pete probably should have been a little harder on everybody after the game, saying, like, why are we getting to the line of scrimmage so slow? But Russell Wilson was the one that was on the field that was taking his sweet time to get to the line of scrimmage. And hey, if you all of a sudden offensively are in the midst of a funk and you're late out of the huddle and you get to the line of scrimmage and you got to snap the ball before the play clock expires and you're on the road and it's loud, and then all of a sudden you're panicking more about the ball coming to you than you are about making the necessary pre-snap adjustments, all of that lends itself to what you saw from the Texans against the Rams on Sunday. You know, there was a lot of that. I'm going to go back and probably time, and this is going to be not so fun operation, but I'm going to go back and try to see where on the play clock every single snap was. Because I agree with them. The problem that I have is that we've known about this for a while, and it wasn't fixed during last season, and it wasn't fixed during the offseason. And I get it. It's one game. It's going to take some time for these guys to, with a new offense and a juggled offensive line and new playmakers, it's going to take time for them to get to a point where they're actually crisp. But come on. DeMeco, "Everything falls on me. We'll get it fixed." As far as the penalties, 11 penalties for 80 yards on the game. Here's what DeMeco Ryans said. He wasn't upset about the aggressive penalties. I wasn't either. There weren't any aggressive penalties that were that bad. There was that one call where Puka Nacua needed an eye patch, where I thought he put his head down, and I don't think that was on the Texans. There was one that was picked up. It was Kalen Ballock hitting a Rams receiver close to the end zone. I forget who on the Rams that guy was. But, yeah, I don't think that there were any bad aggressive penalties, but the pre-snap penalties, like the two illegal shifts, the false starts, and worst of all, the encroachment. I don't know what the hell EJ Speed was doing on that encroachment. Those were bad. Aggressive penalties are going to happen. We're not losing our minds over that, said Ryan's about the aggressive penalties. Yeah, I'm with him. But everyone's not, no one's mad about the aggressive penalties, too. I'm wondering how that question was framed, and I'll go back and I'll watch the press conference after today's show. I'm wondering how that question was framed, but like everyone's mad about the pre-snap stuff because the pre-snap stuff also happened last season, and it shouldn't. It shouldn't ever happen, to be perfectly honest. But when it happens, it shouldn't happen that much. Speaking of those pre-snap penalties and things that put the Texans in a tough situation, D'Amico had this to say about constantly being in spots where it was difficult for them, second and 13, second and 18, et cetera, et cetera. We had some plays where we were playing behind the sticks. We did many things we were trained not to do. It's hard to get the ball to Nico because we were second and 18, third and 13. When we have positive plays, it opens up the offense for us. Well, yeah, duh. Duh. Anyway. I would like to see the Texans get positive plays on offense and not shoot themselves in the foot. This offensive line is going to be a work in progress. Ariante Ursery had a couple of nice moments in run blocking, but in pass protection, he was the worst rookie of the weekend. And with all the juggling that's going on, now you got Jarrett Patterson in at center. So Cole Popovich doesn't have his guy from the Patriots. Nick Cayley doesn't have his guy from the Patriots. It's somebody else new entirely. Now that guy's going to have to develop a rapport communication-wise with his left guard, who is Laken Tomlinson, and then his right guard at Ingram if he comes back. If he doesn't come back, it's still going to be Titus Howard, I guess, at right guard, which means Ariante Ursery is still going to be at right tackle, and Cam Robinson's going to be at left tackle. And I wonder if they just stick with that so that there can be some chemistry and rapport developed at all. But it's going to be hard to do that when you constantly are mixing things up.
I have a question. I'm not sure if it has already been answered.
Hit me, baby.
And this is very sad about the Texans' state of the offensive line that I'm asking this question. Do we know when Ed Ingram's going to come back?
We don't know anything about injuries. We're not going to know anything about injuries. Here's what we know about injuries today. Cade Stover hurt his foot. He'll miss some time. We have to update our tight end room. Okay, that's as close to saying he's out for the year as possible. He did break his foot. Jake Andrews rolled his ankle. He was carted off the field. How bad is a rolled ankle? I don't know. Is
that he was carted off the field.
Right. So. Like, did he break his ankle while he rolled it?
Yeah. Did he sprain it as he rolled it?
Very vague way of dodging around that, Sean. Braxton Berrios, Christian Kirk are, quote, recovering well. End quote. Did anyone ask about Joe Mixon? Probably not. I know, I get it. He's on the NFL injured list. It's not, there's no point in asking about him. He's not going to be ready to go. Whatever.
Any update?
Want an update. Just ask the question. God. Just ask the question.
Yeah. It just
I can't go. They're during my show now. It's like they're trolling me. I was annoying press conference question guy.
You are.
They've killed me. They've killed
They've neutered
me.
You.
They've neutered me. Yes, they've spayed me, neutered me, whatever.
Oh, dog of the week.
Dog of the week, right. I'm the dog of the week.
Yeah, I don't know, Paul. If I knew, I'd definitely have the answer. No.
They don't want that. They don't want any more of that at their press conference.
Yeah, like the one time I got into it with the head of Texas PR. The head of Texas PR is awesome, by the way. Now.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
You hear me laughing in the background. What kind of laugh do you think that was? Do you think it was authentic? Do you think it was?
I think it was press conference laugh.
It was press conference laughter, yeah. I remember hearing back some of these clips almost 10 years later, thinking to myself, oh my God, you were a chucklehead just like the ones you make fun of. You were yuck, yuck, yuckity, yuck McGee out there. Wow, that was funny. Anyway, please give me an answer and approve of the way that I asked that question. That was me.
I'm going to add a lot of caveats to this question because I want to prove that I know football.
By the way, I'm not alone in doing that. I just admit it. I just admit that I was doing that. Now I ask the quickest questions I possibly can. You know? Anyway. That's the Houston Texans. They're a football team that plays their games in Houston, Texas. They are 0-1 after a 14-9 loss to the Rams. And now I think we officially turn the page from that game. AP Top 25 came out over the weekend. Biggest upset of the weekend, my Florida Gators. I did not go to the school, but whatever. I liked them when I was growing up in Massachusetts and then lived in Florida for high school. And actually have gone to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium twice. So I feel like I can claim it more than other people who are T-shirt college fans can. But I am a T-shirt college fan of Florida. They lost to South Florida, who I also could claim that I'm a T-shirt college fan of because I went to 15 games when I was in high school. But I'm not going to do that.
If they beat the Canes, I don't
know. If they beat the Canes, I'm probably buying a shirt. No, I'm not kidding. I'm probably buying a shirt if they beat the Canes. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, good for them. I'm happy for them. But you would think that if you lose to, I don't know, an unranked football team, that maybe, just maybe, you would drop in the rankings. Unfortunately, for this poor AP Top 25 voter, it seems that she forgot to remember what happened to Florida when she put her top 25 together.
But as far as what my votes are and what my process is, you know, I wake up early in the morning after covering a game late in the night before. Don't want to go too much into my progress or process or logic, but I will say I appreciate everybody's interaction on social media and all of your feedback. You know, there's tons of people that vote on the AP poll, and like, it's not a perfect system, but at the end of the day, like, no matter who you pick, it does even out because there's so many people who vote. And like I said, it's really fun for discussion. It doesn't, you know, probably matter in the end, but I'm glad that people are having a really good time with it.
Okay. I mean, sure, doesn't necessarily matter in the end. However, you're being far too dismissive of the mistake you made. You should have said, yeah, I effed up, and I'm getting hilarious comments about it.
Yeah, I should have just been like, yep, complete brain fart. Just completely forgot that they lost.
Instead, she talked about her post-game process. Okay, game ends at 7:30, writes a couple of articles, interviews a couple of players after the games. I think she had a night on the town. No, I say this as somebody who, if I were in her shoes, I would do the same thing. Oh, game's done. The team that I cover on a daily basis just lost to South Florida.
Oh, no, she doesn't cover Florida.
She doesn't?
No, she's an AP voter.
Oh, she's just a random AP voter.
Yeah, she covers USC. She covers, she's based in Los Angeles.
Okay, because I saw this and I wasn't 100% sure who posted this. Okay, this is the writer because quote tweeting gets to a point. Haley Sawyer, USC Sports for SoCal News Group, adjunct professor for College of the Canyons. Oh, so she's a professor. She's not teaching kids any lessons about accountability here.
Followed by Phil Steele. I can see that.
Okay.
I don't know.
Listen.
It means nothing.
She's on the West Coast. Like, this actually hurts her argument.
Yeah, because the game she covers ends at, like, whatever, 9 o'clock her time.
This game was over at 4:30 Pacific Coast time. And she just missed it? This was literally the only thing of consequence that happened this weekend outside of Mississippi State beating Arizona State and Baylor beating SMU.
OU Michigan.
Michigan as well. Like this was a pretty slow week.
Yeah, especially compared to week one. Like this week. Like week one especially because it's so long. Like it starts on Thursday. That, you know, UCF beat Boise on a Thursday, and then it goes until Monday of Labor Day weekend. If you forget, like, oh yeah, whatever, Nebraska won on Friday. Whoops, I thought they lost. Like that's more understandable than like Florida lost. Yeah, Florida lost a huge in-state game, and then I mean, just to like play it off as like, I don't want to go into my process.
It doesn't matter
why an SEC team losing at home to South Florida actually moves them up. I don't want to go into the process of why that happens. Yeah, but it doesn't matter anyway. So quit asking. No, also, there's no way she enjoys all the engagement she's getting, because
they're all being sexist. 100%.
I'm scrolling through the comment section. I would enjoy a lot of those.
But this is why people are sexist. It's stuff like this. Like, if you're in this field, listen, you have a... I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying, if you're in this industry covering sports and you're a woman, you really gotta dot the I's and cross the T's. You really gotta. And, hey, saying, whoops, my bad, that's justifiable. But say, like, I'm not gonna talk about my post-game process for this game, which I guess she didn't watch. I'm assuming the Southern California game was late or something like that, but I don't...
Yeah. I mean, that is, like, a legitimate thing with the AP poll, is that they're asking beat writers to vote on teams that they didn't watch.
That is kind of weird.
It is, like... Because if you cover a college football game, like, you're there for 6 hours, at least, between pre- and post-game, and then the actual 3.5-4-hour game that you're covering, like, it is... Most of your Saturday is immersed in one game, and then you also have to, like, that's why most of the voters just, like, kind of check the scores, move people up and down based off of did they win. Like, they don't really know if they look good or not, or any of the circumstances of it. But, yeah, I mean, at the very least, just pull up the ESPN scores page. just do that. Just pull up the ESPN top 25 scores.
As Junior Bronco said on the Twitch, like, she would have been better off asking ChatGPT and copy-pasting. Yeah, yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, legitimately.
ChatGPT, what's your...
Or Grok or any artificial intelligence. Yeah, yeah. You legitimately could do this, and maybe she did do that. Maybe that was her... Maybe the AI got it wrong. ChatGPT on sports gets it wrong from time to time. But maybe that was her process. But my theory on her process is that she had a fun night. And maybe...
Is Saturdays.
Maybe it was a really successful Saturday date. I don't know.
Yeah, she looks pretty young.
Yeah. She looks like someone who would, like me, be irresponsible on a Saturday night. I'm just thankful that I cover the NFL, so I can be irresponsible on Saturday nights instead of college. 713-780-3776 to call to text. YouTube at ESPN Houston. Twitch at ESPN 975. Time for Worst Take Tuesday. Let's just get right into it. And I think we're only going to talk about one guy in Worst Take Tuesday. He had quite the week, this one, who I've gotten in an argument with online before.
Did you have a bad take?
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Don't listen to that guy. We love him.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
It's Worst Take Tuesday.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
There's so many people I could have given Worst Take to for this Worst Take Tuesday special edition. Could have given it to Benjamin Solak, who is my least favorite coverer of the NFL, who posted this in the midst of Sunday Night Football. The Ravens are so good, they aren't even interesting to talk about anymore. Ooh, how will they match up in the... Doesn't matter. How will the Chiefs play the... Don't care. Which NFC team would be best at... None. And he didn't even have the balls to post this on X. He posted this on Blue Sky, which is liberal Twitter. Also, you had Nick Wright saying there's a 0% chance that Justin Herbert outplays Patrick Mahomes in Brazil. It was in Brazil, in Nick's defense. And you've also got this lady who wrote an article in the Washington Post... A $1.4 billion jackpot from Powerball sounds nice, but actually, it could lead to poor decisions. F off! F off! You're worse than the AP lady who moved Florida up in the rankings after they lost to South Florida. Who, by the way, if they beat Miami, maybe it's justified. Anyway, she's definitely going to be betting on that. No, we're going to focus this entire segment on Ryan Clark, who... is an analyst for ESPN. I used to be a fan of Ryan Clark. I don't know what happened between the YouTube show he does, The Pivot, with Channing Crowder and Fred Taylor, and the analysis that he does on ESPN. But along the way, he just became somebody that gets into weird fights with people and has become unbelievably condescending. Especially for a guy who had a solid but not special NFL career. So the latest example of this came on Friday after talking about the Eagles and the Cowboys and CeeDee Lamb's performance in Thursday Night Football. He responded to Peter Schrager, who is an NFL analyst who's pretty connected but didn't play the game, like this.
He runs the out route.
You wake up this morning saying A.J. Brown has had a better day than CeeDee Lamb?
Wait, but, no, you know what you wake up saying, though? A.J. Brown's team is 1-0.
Of course.
Right,
I get it.
But the thing is this, though, and we shouldn't do this on TV.
Uh-oh.
And so I apologize if people think this is rude. That's the non-player.
Oh, stop. CeeDee Lamb is, let
me tell you why. I'm not looking at
fantasy football. Ryan, I'm not. Don't belittle me like that. I could come in and say, as 3X players are saying one thing and give an alternative perspective, that maybe CeeDee Lamb did play well. And
Peter, what I need for you to do is not get mad and let me finish for one.
Okay, go on.
It wasn't about you. It was going to be about me.
Okay.
I love how he wraps it up with.
I can't speak for CeeDee Lamb. I'm speaking for me.
I love how he made it about himself. While telling Peter to shh. Hey, your little defense there? Shh. I mean, it is kind of funny. And look, if I were in that setting, that would be me next to Ryan Clark. But what my response would be is, oh, well, I've actually won 6 Super Bowls because I'm a Patriots fan. Remember all those times the Patriots beat the Steelers? And this would definitely undermine my credibility with some, but all the massholes would agree with me. Hey, Ryan Clark, have you ever frozen out in the cold in a playoff game? I have. I've been to 2 AFC championship games. Patriots won both. I've also been to a couple of playoff games. I've been to a Super Bowl. Patriots won that Super Bowl.
Also, how are they arguing that A.J. Brown, who had a better day, A.J. Brown?
Dumb. I don't know.
CeeDee Lamb had 110 yards. I get the drops at the end. A.J. Brown had 1 catch for 8 yards.
I think that In Clark's defense, I actually think that the conversation that they were probably having was like, hey, CeeDee Lamb looked great. A.J. Brown not involved. What the heck's up with that? Because they're looking for things to take with the Eagles.
They said who had a better game?
Well, talking about. Lamb's drops were bad and they lost as a result of the drops. That's how I can understand how Ryan Clark would put that out there. I do get it. But the dramatic, I shouldn't do this on the air, but I'm going to do it on the air. And then telling Peter to essentially shut up while he finishes his point, which, I don't know, I don't even know what point he was about to make. He's like, this is about me. I'm like, okay. This is the new Ryan Clark experience. Yeah. It's about him. It's about his personal feelings. And I don't know what he's trying to be. Because sometimes he actually is funny, but he tries to be so serious so often that I don't know what I'm supposed to take seriously coming from him. So more from Ryan Clark just over the course of the past week. Here he is talking about generational talent when it comes to Texas quarterback Arch Manning.
A few of them. I think there's less than what you think. I think John Elway was a generational talent. I think Patrick Mahomes is a generational talent. I don't think Tom Brady, I don't think Drew Brees, I don't think Peyton Manning are generational talents. I think Andrew Luck ended up being a generational talent. I don't think there's a ton of them out there.
But so then what? Then how does one in your eyes be a generational talent? Because there's not a lot of difference.
Production. Oh boy.
Let me chime
then
in.
Stephen
here,
A. Just
I love
hijacks
the argument
the
back
mic.
And forth between y'all. I ain't trying to get in the way of
you.
Here's the reality.
He is
the operative word here is, do you believe Arch Manning is a generational talent? He could be, but he's not.
Why not
yet? What have you seen to say that he is?
There's no evidence.
There's no evidence.
So Clark said Brady, Brees, and Manning, the best quarterbacks of the last 20 years, statistically and in terms of success. He's saying they aren't generational talents. And then he doesn't define what generational talent is. And since Clark often dances in the culture war conversations, a lot of people are assuming, Oh, because they're schleppy white guys? That they're not generational talents? And, I mean, he did bring up John Elway, and he did bring up Lamar Jackson, but Jackson wasn't thought of as a generational talent coming out of college. Still pulling, like, move him to wide receiver.
I think, and this is where, like, Tom Brady wasn't a generational talent.
No, he wasn't. He was a six-round pick. That makes
drafted
sense.
200 guys got drafted before him. Yeah.
But he never defined it, and it just lends itself, because no one likes Clark anymore.
And then it turned into, like, but it's about production. It's like, but you just... no one disagreed. You say everyone agrees it's about production, but then the most productive quarterbacks of all time aren't generational talents.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's actually the opposite of what Ryan Clark was saying, but somehow everyone's agreeing.
One last worst take on Worst Take Tuesday from Ryan Clark, Sean. Here is Ryan Clark talking about Justin Herbert before Friday's Chiefs-Chargers game.
I know you watch a lot of film. You probably watch so much film, and you didn't backlog so much stuff. You probably pushed away what Justin Herbert looked like against the Texans.
It was bad.
You probably thought that to myself. There ain't no way Justin Herbert threw more interceptions in one playoff game than he did the entire season. Not Mr. I could throw a football through a pinhole. Not him. Not look how tall he is. Look at his light, his flowing locks. Look who his new girlfriend is. Right? Not that guy. Justin Herbert, whenever it matters, has been terrible. Justin Herbert didn't win big games in college as talented as he was. Justin Herbert in two games in the playoffs in the league. You lose a 27-0 lead. You go throw four interceptions against the Texans. I think Justin Herbert is extremely talented. I also think Justin Herbert is the fun friend.
I share his emotional feelings on Justin Herbert because I think Herbert's been put in front of us and we're all supposed to agree that he's awesome. But, and Sean, you brought this up before the show. There's a certain game in college that he did play and he did pretty well.
He won a Rose Bowl.
It's like the most important game
now,
if you're not in the national title in the Big Ten.
He didn't actually play that well in the Rose Bowl.
Okay, gotcha.
He was okay.
But he won it.
But he won. And like AJ Brown, his team won. He played awesome.
Yeah. From the 346, a texter says, it's clear what Ryan meant. By the way, it's just conservatives that don't like him. No, I think there's something with Clark where he's just trying so damn hard, and he's got to like pick a lane with how he analyzes sports. Because one day he's saying that Chris Brown is a better entertainer than Michael Jackson, and that Joe Flacco just had the best resurrection since Jesus the Christ. And the way he says Jesus the Christ, I'm like, wait, is he being sacrilegious or is he actually making a comparison to old JC? I don't know. And I think the constant, the way he goes about it, it's just talking down to people constantly without any sense of irony, without any sense of self-deprecation. And it happens so much in these settings. And I don't know. It's just annoying. And then he does these apology videos whenever he does something wrong, where he's like four different camera angles of him apologizing. It's like the most self-important thing ever. It's like, are you self-important or not? I guess that's what I'm telling him to be. You got to pick one or the other. But both, that's not going to work. Anyway, Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. That is Worst Take Tuesday. We are way late, so on the other side, a very brief, in case you missed it, stay put.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? No? Then download it now in your app store.
Did you catch everything this weekend in the world of sports and beyond? Neither did we.
I do not recall that, okay?
Doesn't ring a bell. Sorry, I have no recommendation of that.
No idea.
Absolutely not.
And now, in case you missed it.
Everything you missed over the weekend in sports, in case you missed it, every single Tuesday at 2:30. How about Cougs legend Ed Oliver, the hero of Sunday Night Football? Paul, actually, it was Josh Allen. Nope, it's Ed Oliver. It's the man who, like Vladimir Putin, we have seen riding shirtless on a horse in the greater Houston area. Six tackles, three for a loss, one sack, and one very critical forced fumble that helped the Bills take down Baltimore. What else did we miss over the last couple of days? We found out before football games on Sunday on Fox from Jay Glazer that the Philadelphia Eagles made the best offer for Micah Parsons of any team in the league. What did they offer? Two first-round picks, a third-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and, quote, other things, end quote. Per Glazer, Kenny Clark is the reason that the Cowboys decided to make the deal with the Packers. No, it was because they were too chicken bleep to actually trade Micah Parsons in the division. A man with actual chutzpah would have traded the person that gets him, you know, some value to the person who's going to offer the most. Like Drew Bledsoe, when the Patriots traded Bledsoe to the Bills for a couple of first-round picks. Or whatever it was. Was it one first-round pick? I don't remember. All I know is they traded him in division.
Yeah, and time will tell who won that trade.
Yeah, exactly.
Time will tell. Too early to call it. Too early to call
it. It is too early to call it at this moment in time. You know? Anyway. In case you missed it, continues. Do we have, Sean, I plugged this into the rundown a little bit later. If not, no big deal. Bill Belichick has banned scouts from North Carolina, excuse me, from the New England Patriots, from visiting him at North Carolina. And this doesn't seem to add up since Bill Belichick was at Gillette Stadium in the not-too-distant past for Tom Brady's retirement statue ceremony, whatever the hell it was. So Belichick actually said, I'm not welcome there. Why would people be welcome here, I guess? And Mike Vrabel was on WEEI, a radio station in Boston, and kind of baffled by Belichick saying, well, if I'm not welcome there, Patriots scouts aren't welcome here.
Scouts onto campus to scout his players.
Again, nothing surprises me. I would imagine that that Bill, I mean, he came back for, the best of my knowledge, Tom's ceremony, so that I would, I guess he's welcome back based on the fact that he was there. So I'll just go by that. Since his departure as the head coach here, he's been back, and I'll leave it at that.
Has he maybe been out shopping or something at Patriot Place and not allowed to walk? Does his key card still work?
When you get fired, the key card does not work. I tried it. I went back to Tennessee. It doesn't work.
Yeah, nope.
They call that a Mancini.
No.
You know, Vrabel has an interesting relationship with Belichick. I think he, when he was a player for Belichick, was one of the few players that actually would basically mouth off to Belichick at times. So they have an interesting relationship, and this is another layer on top of it. Because Vrabel's definitely not behind this. This seems to be manufactured in Belichick's head by perhaps Jordan Hudson, his girlfriend. Like, that's the most sound theory I can think of as to why he thinks he's not welcome there. He won six Super Bowls there. Of course he's welcome. What are you talking about, Bill? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think this is a little either Jordan Hudson or Michael Jordan mode for Bill Belichick. I'm taking that personally. Also, like you said, the interesting relationship with Vrabel. Vrabel never coached under Bill Belichick. He never coached for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, that is...
A former Belichick defensive player never coached under him and is now the head coach at the Patriots. It's like it is a weird scenario of just how that.
Yeah, Belichick. Maybe Belichick's a little insecure about it.
He's not really a Belichick way.
And by the way,
that's the crazy thing. That's why, you know, when they hired him as the head coach, it wasn't like they were trying to, like, we got to go back to Vrabel. Like, they didn't hire Bill O'Brien. They didn't hire
McDaniels to be head coach.
Romeo Crennel or, you know, one of the, like, classic Belichick tree guys. They got McDaniels is their offensive coordinator. But they got Mike Vrabel, who it's like a weird middle ground of he did play with for Belichick, but he never coached with them. He's not of that kind of tree. If anything, he's from the Bill O'Brien tree.
That is true.
Yeah.
He was linebacker coach and defensive coordinator.
Only NFL job he had before being the Titans head coach.
He's from the Cal McNair tree, some would say.
The Kerry McNair tree. Kerry McNair tree.
Ooh, that's also true. I forgot about that. In case you missed it, continues. Steve Ballmer and the Clippers are being scrutinized since it seems Steve Ballmer may or may not. Doing a little legalese there to protect myself.
There we go.
Made Kawhi Leonard an employee at essentially a shell company of sorts so that he could circumvent the salary cap and pay Kawhi Leonard. For some reason, he thought, you know what? I'm going to address these rumors head on ESPN with Ramona Shelburne, who, in Ballmer's defense, Ramona Shelburne does seem to give some softball interviews. Here is Steve Ballmer, part one, trying to do some damage control.
In the court documents and in Pablo's podcast, they report it was $28 million.
Pablo's podcast, I don't know anything about the court documents on this. I haven't seen them, and I don't know. I'm not trying to be, ooh, I don't know. I really don't know. But the speculation is what it is. And why did they do that?
It's a lot of money. I mean, $28 million, $7 million a year is a lot of money for a guy that you didn't actually require to do anything.
I don't know why they did what they did. And I don't know how different it is. I really don't. And frankly, any speculation would be crazy. These were guys who committed fraud. How would I be able? Look, they conned me.
You're one of the richest men in America.
They conned me. I made an investment in these guys thinking it was on the up and up, and they conned me. At this stage, I have no ability to predict why they might have done anything they did.
I like that spin zone. They conned me. Wonder how much he's paying the person that thought that up.
They conned me because Ballmer gave this company $50 million. That company then turned around and paid Kawhi Leonard $48 million. Why would you do that if you're not doing that for Steve Ballmer? Like the motivations of the con artist makes no sense under the they conned me idea.
More Ballmer with Ramona Shelburne. This got worse and worse for him, I think.
Have you spoken to Kawhi about any of these allegations since the podcast came out on Wednesday?
I have not, no.
Would you be interested to see what he has to say?
It's really his business with aspiration. Mm-hmm. So, no, I wouldn't ask about it, no.
It's really his business. Yeah, sure. One last clip of Steve Ballmer dodging the tough questions from Ramona Shelburne, who is exceptionally team and owner friendly in her time covering the NBA.
And we even found the email that makes the first introduction. It was early November. I won't remember the exact date. So where could any of this circumvention have happened? It didn't. It couldn't have. The introduction got made, and then they were off to the races on their own. We weren't involved. I eventually learned that they had reached a deal. I have no idea what the deal was.
Sure. Everyone believes you. I don't know why he addressed this head on. If this is BS, do not go and do the interview.
Or
ignore it and it'll go away. This is Streisand effect 101.
Or provide information when Pablo Torre reaches out to you that could prove your innocence. You could also interact with the person doing the full-scale reporting.
It seems that Jalen Brunson with the Knicks could be the next subject of a Pablo Torre investigation. And, I mean,
James Dolan is just sitting up at night.
I think Steve Ballmer actually is competent as far as businessmen go. People that are at the top of a major company. I think the James Dolan one's going to be awesome. Is it possible that we finally get the link between James Dolan and Harvey Weinstein that James only sings about? I think it is.
Yeah.
More, and in case you missed it, the Cougs are playing Colorado this week. Colorado is turning to their third string quarterback, a guy by the name of Ryan Staub. Here is Deion Sanders and Ryan Staub right after Colorado's big win on Saturday. I don't know how this happened. It's pretty damn funny.
I had a dream, and I saw something, and I just wanted to chase it. I love being here. I love playing for Coach Prime. And, man, I'm just so blessed I got the opportunity. All I needed was that opportunity, and we got more work to do.
Took advantage of it. Coach, how are you going to manage these three quarterbacks going forward with Houston next week in Big 12 play?
I got a plan. Like, I had a plan coming into this game. I have a plan. I don't know if I'm going to disclose it until we get to our destination, but I saw what everybody else saw today. Martin Luther starved. That's what he said. He had a dream, right?
That was awesome.
Yeah, and now there's been some reporting that it will be Staub starting. But,
trying to throw the fog of war at our beloved Cougs.
But then Deion Sanders pushed back on that, but did say that he got first-team reps today. So, yes, who knows? There's three quarterbacks you could see. All three of them, perhaps.
People are asking me to go to the Cougs-Colorado game on Friday. I actually can't. The girlfriend and I have arranged plans already. So.
Row, row, row.
Sorry, no? Cougs. I trust you. This is Colorado football post Travis Hunter and post Shedeur Sanders. Colorado football to me is a, for my beloved Cougs, 2-0 under Willie Fritz, destroyed those dorks at Rice. Ooh, by the way, I like the Rice guys too. But our beloved Cougs playing Colorado, this is a I can leave my kids in the car with the AC on kind of game. Our beloved Cougs! Thank you. There you go.
That's a good spin zone. That's a spin zone Steve Ballmer would be. He's jealous he didn't think of that.
Oh, he definitely is. Listen,
I'm in fact so innocent.
Steve, pay me. I will do you. I will do this for you very easily on the side. You know what my advice would have been? Don't do it, idiot.
Just don't say anything.
Don't go on. No, there's no win in going on.
No.
You're just going to have to do mental gymnastics on the fly and improv, even if these questions were like basically fed to Ramona Shelburne by you, which was probably the case. Like, that's the only reason he actually did the interview. I'm sure that's why. Those were the stipulations before. So there you go. All right. That's in case you missed it. Everything you might have missed over the weekend in sports. Want to power on through? Want to do a 3-commercial break kind of show, Sean? Or do we got to hit the break? Do we have to hit a break?
We don't have to hit a break, but we can talk about Walmart for a second.
Ooh, let me tell you about my friends at Walmart. Guys, did you know that the Walmart you thought you knew is now new? Who knew? Now you do. Walmart has more than 500 million items online. Yeah, I said 500 million. Over 500 million. That's more than 500 million. Isn't that nuts? I almost said 500,000 there. That would have been also nuts. 500,000 is a lot. 500 million items. You can find a huge selection online that you can't find in stores for all sorts of different departments. And you can also get groceries there. And here's what the best part of shopping groceries at Walmart is. Delivered groceries at other stores cost more. At Walmart, grocery prices are the same for delivery as they are in the store. Whoa, what? That's pretty wild. It's because Walmart has the lowest of the low prices. Walmart can even deliver these groceries to you in as fast as an hour. Isn't that crazy? Seriously, yes. Modern technology, everybody. Use Express Delivery to get all the eligible items that you need from Walmart, groceries, home goods, prescriptions. When it comes to feeding your family, hosting a tailgate, or throwing a party, think Walmart for all your grocery needs. The Walmart you thought you knew is now new. Who knew? Walmart.com.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I actually did buy a pair of Powerball tickets on Saturday. I did not win the lottery. That's why I am still here. I think it was split between two people. One of them, I think, is from the greater Houston area. Might have been a college student. Shout out to that kid. Try not to blow it all in one sitting. Alabama, you could win the lottery there if you so choose. And this lovely lady by the name of Susie Connerly had this to say about what she'd do if she won the Powerball.
I'll tell you exactly what I'd do with the first $70 million. I'd pay off Kalen DeBoer and get him the heck out of the University of Alabama, and then I'd take whatever else it took to get rid of the AD.
She says she'd also give some money to her church and save some for taxes.
I know I'm not going to win. I just hope I win some scratch-offs. I just do it for the fun of it.
Just for the fun of it. But she would like Kalen DeBoer fired.
I don't blame her.
That'd be so funny if we found out that, like, someone got a coach got fired because a booster just became a booster because they won the lottery, and they're like, first thing I'm doing, get him out of here.
Get him out.
I would totally have done that to Tom Herman and Charlie Strong. I'd be like, I'll fire him today.
I'll say this.
Billy Napier?
I would not buy a Billy Napier. Florida, clean it up yourself.
That's on you.
That's on you.
You made the mess. Or it's, hey, no, I'll pay for it, but at the end of the season, you have to finish this carton of cigarettes yourself.
No, I'm not paying a damn thing for them, you know? like you guys went into this year with him, and you knew he probably wasn't the guy. And you entirely did it because, what, DJ Lagway had a couple of good games? I mean, come on. Graham Mertz looks better with the Texans than he did at Florida. Last preseason.
Yeah, with the vaunted Texans offense. You know how well they coach up those the offense.
I mean, they got some
down on Kirby.
You thought Bobby Slowick was bad. What does this say about Billy Napier? Anyway, yeah, I'm a little bitter about Florida. They lost to South Florida over the weekend. A Missouri fan had a chance to kick a 45-yard field goal to win $25,000. This Missouri fan, as part of the border war between Kansas and Missouri, decided instead to reveal a FKU shirt and then kick the ball directly at the Kansas sideline, which is a hateful move. This person really hates Kansas. I would just remind everyone from Missouri, when it comes to the border war, only one state was fighting for slavery, and it was not Kansas. It was Missouri. So, I like, when you're talking about things you hate about Kansas, Kansas was on the right side of history, and you weren't. And literally, the border war goes back to pre-Civil War and during Civil War times, where people from Kansas and people from Missouri were going across state lines and killing each other in the name of slavery, or abolishing slavery.
Or states' rights, Paul.
Shut up. Shut up.
No, but you really have to hate the
it's $25,000 and it's a 45-yard field goal. That is makeable, as we have seen on college game day already this year.
Yeah, like, chances are you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
But especially, maybe it's just me. Once I'm standing over the ball, I'm like, you know what, maybe I will make that. Same thing as when you buy a lottery ticket. It's like, I know I probably won't, like the Alabama lady. But in the 1% of your brain, you're like, man, but what if I did? I might.
Yeah.
Like, it's that. And to be like, nope, I want to kick it at them, kick it at their sideline.
I mean, it is a legendary move, but no one's going to know your name. You're like, it'll be like, oh, remember when that guy did that thing? Like,
He probably has the rest of this football season as, like, that's the story that gets told at parties.
I think it's the rest of the week, because I don't really feel great about either of these two programs this year. I do like Jaden Daniels at Kansas, but Missouri, I don't know. One last one to wrap things up. Angel Reese was suspended for half of a game on Sunday after being already suspended on Friday. Friday, she was suspended because she got her 8th technical foul of the season. Sunday, she was suspended for a half. Yes, just a half, for conduct detrimental to the team because she was talking trash about some of her teammates. She's really well-liked, this Angel Reese, and I'm sure at some point everyone's going to stop bullying her because she is a strong, powerful, independent woman and has never said one thing or done one thing that would lead others to not like her. We are a very pro Angel Reese show, and we are never sarcastic. And on that note, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Paul Gallant Show. Big thanks to everyone who called in, texted in, our YouTubers, Twitchers, and everyone else. I am merely Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes, thank you to him behind the glass, too. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. It's been a fun 3 hours. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Tuesday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!